Live from our national studios here in Accra and linking up with all our regional FM stations, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, what goes into deciding on the loan, on the need for a loan, and what is called the due process in this discussion? Can some be avoided? The game to a party as a trophy, promoting Dagaba and Frafra unity. Where and when did it start? Emerari Alomele, a giant in journalism, is gone. How is he being remembered? We'll be picking all these issues. But as usual, we encourage you to share actively with us all your comments and concerns on 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on straight to our stories. One of the issues that has generated so much debate in recent political discourse is the contracting of loans by the NDC government. The debate, mostly split on partisan lines, has justified or criticized the contracting of loans. Whilst our observers have called for the appropriate use of the loans, others believe the nation is sagging under the heavy burden of these same loans. What goes into deciding whether government should procure a loan, and what is the process it goes through at the finance committee level to the committee of the whole in parliament? Behind the News throws the searchlight on the loan saga, and joining us first on the issue is the chairman of the finance committee of parliament and MP for Kitto North, James Aveji. You are welcome to Behind the News, sir.
Thank you very much.
I guess it's been a soccer night. You were enjoying that particular one?
Yes, I enjoyed. We are happy that Ghana is about to qualify, even though we have one more match to play.
Good.
Ghana will qualify for the next cup.
Yes. We want to look at some of the straw burning issues in relation to the loans. When we talk about contracting a loan, how is the process initiated?
Okay, thank you very much. In contracting loan as a country, it is not different from when an individual or company wants to contract loan. If I may take a bit to what are the sources of funds for a company, we have three main sources of funds that company can rely on for their product development or their existence. Each of these costs, sources of funds have cost to it. Now, a company can issue shares where individuals buy shares and become part owner of the company, and therefore the money raised by the company from the sale of shares is used to run the company. That's one source of funding for company. Another source of funding, which is also relatively good, is the company deciding to plow back all its profit or part of profit to grow the company. That's another one. The third one is company going to borrow money, either short-term loan or long-term loan, either from the bank or from an investor, a sole investor, who can then loan money to company. So the company have these three main sources of funding. Now, when we come to government side, government also have sources of funding. The basic and major one is money that are generated by government through domestic taxes and other sources. Now, we call this one domestic revenue that is generated by government. Government can also raise money through loans that the government contracts. Now, what are the processes that involve in government going for loans for projects? First of all, government must identify projects that it wants to undertake. We all know that government is a provider of social goods. Government provides the hospitals at a subsidized cost to the people. Government provides the road infrastructure to promote business growth. The government provides the schools for education at low cost or near cost to the people. These social goods that the government provides, government must find money either from domestic revenue, taxes that the government collects, or if that is not enough, government then borrow money with the hope of paying back this money over a long period of time. So first of all, government would identify the project. For instance, if government wants to put up another Kolebu, because maybe the current Kolebu is not providing the it's not meeting the demands of the people, and government decides to provide another Kolobo somewhere in this country. Government will assess the need for this. Is it necessary for government to at all go for to provide these services at all? If the answer is yes, then government must provide that service. Government will then go, why do I get the money from to provide these services? Can I raise the money internally? Can I raise the money through domestic taxes? If the answer is yes, government will go and raise this money to grow or to build this hospital. But if the answer is no, that government cannot build this hospital through domestic revenue, government will then go and say, I want to borrow money, because without borrowed money, government cannot build a hospital. Then government will initiate the move. Say, where do I borrow this money from? There are so many sources that government can borrow this money from. From the bank, on commercial loan, or from other states, multilateral organizations, which can provide concessional loan. That is the grant, there's a grant element provided. Or government can then say, let me issue bonds in the international market, or let me issue this risk-free money that government has been raising through treasury bills. So these sources are available to government. Now, if government decides to go and borrow, because government doesn't want to raise bond, issue bond, or raise this treasury bill, government will then say, let me go and borrow this money. Then government will float and start looking for people or organizations that will borrow or lend this money to government. Government will request this organization to provide the terms and conditions of their facility. Government will look at the facility, look at the number of years that government will repay the loan, government will look at the interest rate, government will look at if there's any grant element, will look at it, government will look at any grace period. All this will be factored into a formula. Then government will decide that, oh, this is a commercial loan, or this is a concessional loan. It's a concessional loan if there's a grant element. If the grant element in that loan is up to 35%, then it's a concessional. Government will then decide, for this project, I can only go with a concessional loan. So government will go concessional way. Government will say, well, for this project, I can go commercial. The government will go by commercial, even if the grant element is less than 35%.
Yeah.
These are the things that go into the determination of how government go for a loan facility.
Okay, Mr. Abeji, you've mentioned the commercial loan, you've mentioned the concessional. What is the main difference to the average person?
Okay, the difference is that the commercial loan is just like if you want to go to the bank to go and borrow money, the bank will tell you, the interest rate is 20%, is 15%. There is no grant element. You are not going to. Government is the bank is not asking you to not to pay a portion of the loan, or not to even just let me put it this simple way, not to pay a portion of the loan. That you are paying full principal amount plus the interest that the facility will end. Then it's a commercial. It is concessionary. If taking the number of years you are going to repay the loan, taking the number of years that there will be a grace period, taking the interest rate into consideration, you calculate it, you see that, oh, if this facility were given to you by a bank, you'll be paying so much interest. But now the bank is asking you to pay only this much interest, which is lesser than what you are supposed to pay. Then there is a grant element.
Okay.
Now we look at that percentage. If the percentage of grants in the facility is 35% and more, then by our standard as a country, Ghana, it qualifies as a concessionary facility. So that is a basic interest. The concessionary one is that you are paying the principal and the interest lesser than what you should have paid the normal circumstance.
Okay, fine. So you say government initiates the process. When can we say that the finance committee gets busy looking at that loan?
Yeah, when government initiates this process, by our constitution, Article 181, 1 and 2, government can only borrow money or to people, or can only lend money to people, or can only borrow money from other parties if only Parliament has approved by a resolution for government to do that. So having gone through the processes and satisfied that they have a good deal, they cannot go and sign this contract and take the money unless Parliament approves. So at that point, they will introduce this into Parliament in the form of a loan facility, which they will lay by the Minister of Finance, will lay it on the floor. Then the Speaker will refer this to the Finance Committee, because by Standing Order 171 of our Standing Orders of Parliament, it is a committee in charge of finance that can look at the terms and conditions of the loan. I recommend to the House whether it is in the interest of the country. Then Madam Speaker will refer this to the committee. The committee will then hold a discussion on this facility by inviting the Minister of Finance, by even inviting the sector that the loan is going to be applied. If it is the road sector, the road ministry, minister will be invited, and the technical people will be invited. If it is for health, the health will be invited. So we invite these ministers involved. We'll take questions from them. We'll give them, ask them questions. First, we'll take briefing from them. Why the need for the loan? What processes they have gone through? Do they think that this is a good deal for Ghana? We take all these things from them. Then we will find out more if we are not satisfied. Then we also do our own analysis and say, the project that they are actually asking for, the loan, is it necessary for us as a country? If it is yes, it is necessary. Then the conditions under which they are taking the loan, is it good for us? Is there any grant element? Is there no grant element? Is it good for us to go for it? Do we have any source of funding where we can use, without taking this loan, can we use that source of money to build this facility? We do all these analysis. Then we recommend to the House that, well, this facility, we think that it is not good for us, therefore, let us not go for it. Or we think that this facility is good for us, therefore, let's go for it so that we can bring this project or bring this facility to the people of Ghana. This is what we go to.
So has there ever been an occasion where the Finance Committee, just by looking at the loan and going through the process you've described, will say that, no, we cannot even recommend this to the Committee of the Whole or the House?
Yes, there have been a process. I'll give one example the other time, that there was a facility of $1.8 billion, which was brought to the House for Eastern Corridor. When the committee went into discussion, we realized that the conditions or the terms of the agreement, there are clauses in the agreement that conflict with the law for petroleum revenue management, which ourselves passed. Therefore, we said, well, even though the facility is a good one, we cannot approve it because there are clauses that conflict with what we have as a country. Can you go back, work on those clauses and bring it back? If they bring it back and those corrections are done, we'll go ahead and do our work and recommend to the House. But as we speak now, they are not able to come back. So that is one example. There was another example where some facility was brought and we could not clearly see the source of funding from the financiers. The people who want to borrow and lend this money to Ghana are not able to disclose their source of money. And we do not want to go into taking money from the saloon or whatever. Therefore, we are not able to recommend to the House to approve this. So there are series of this that end at the Finance Committee level without coming to the floor now.
Yeah. So from just what you've stated, why is it that after some time, or in some cases, after going through the necessary due process you've just spoken about, some loans fail to materialize, and even the origins are found to be a little dubious?
No. Okay. Thank you very much. In most of these cases, there are conditions precedent. Condition precedent is that the terms of the facility will be good, and Parliament will go ahead and approve it. But these conditions that will be stated in the agreement must be fulfilled by one side of the party. Either from government side, government must ensure ABCD is done before the facility is given out to government. If government fails to do that, then the facility will not come. That will not be the fault of Parliament. Because Parliament has conditioned precedent. Parliament will be satisfied that the government will do those and fulfill those conditions before the facility is released to government. But if something happens, they are not able to do that, definitely the facility will not come. Or the disbursement process will delay, because if you take government a long time before it fulfills those conditions, then the disbursement will delay. That is the main cause of the delay and non even disbursement of some of these facilities.
Yeah. So I'm still going back to that question, because you spoke about the due process, the way you invite people to even check whether they need that loan and all. And we have in our very recent history where, after talking about all these things, going through, coming to the committee of the whole, it was found out that even where the money was being taken from did not exist as a place that can give a loan. In that case, what happens?
Well, the committee is made up with some members of the House, not all members of the House. If the other members of the House who are not members of the committee have more information than the committee did not have, and therefore could not help the committee's decision, and therefore that person's new information or that separate information he has can enrich the work of the House will disapprove of the facility on the floor. So committee would have recommended it, but the House will say no, even though the committee recommended it, we don't want this facility, based on information that the other members of the House will have. So Parliament has all these avenues by which to ensure that due diligence is done, the due process is followed, in order to ensure that whatever we are proving as a House, it's something that will materialize. But you know, Parliament is also a human institution, and we are not working in isolation. We are working with other bodies. Therefore, if our work depends on the work of some other body, it will end up that we might do a good job, but if the other body did not, then we will not come to the end result of what we are all aiming at. So that is the situation that we are in.
Mr. James Savage, we will leave you for now, but if need be, we will get you back, because you are trying to get in touch with Dr. Bam Boateng of the University of Ghana, that is the Department of Economics, to comment on it. But for now, we have Franklin Kujo of Imani Ghana on the line. So Mr. James Savage, I want to thank you for now. You are Chairman of the Finance Committee of Parliament and MP for Kitchener North. Thanks so much. But Franklin Kujo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening to you, and good evening to your listeners, and congratulations to the Black Star.
Good. What is essential when taking a decision on a loan? At least you have been observing the processes in other countries and looking at ours.
Well, thank you very much. I suspect that question is a very important one. For not only for the Parliament of Ghana or any government at all, but even individual. I suspect that when an individual wants to procure a loan or secure a loan, the individual obviously would have to know whether he has ability, first of all, to utilize the loan, and secondly, to be able to pay back the loan as well. I think these are very fundamental issues regarding what processes should take place before one secures a loan. But on a national level, I think that we've been seeing day in, day out, or year in, year out, some amount of, a bit of a lackadaisical attitude towards doing refined work. And that's really, that's pretty disheartening, especially because of the kinds of politics that we indulge ourselves in here. I mean, if I heard the Honourable Member of Parliament, the Chairman of the Finance Committee, correctly, he's saying that a lot of due diligence is done somehow at the committee level. But then when the committee, having finished its work, then seriously decides that Parliament then has to vote on the issue, then you begin to see certain positions. I think that has not helped us a lot. And your concluding questions on the issues of loans that were either non-existent or loans that were, loans or grants that were supposed to be secured but never are coming, tells you clearly that we haven't been serious with the way we engage in international finance, international business, when it comes to our lawmakers. And it's a really sad situation. I think there are two reasons for that. One of the major reasons, I suspect, is the overbearing attitude of the presidency that we have. And whereby the presidency, I just do not mean the presidency of President Ivan Ssekamuno. I actually mean that we have an overbearing executive president, which always has to have its way when it comes to some of the decisions that are taken on behalf of the entire country. So sometimes the exigency of trying to impress the electorate, and also the fact that the presidency has astonishing powers, coupled with the fact that you have a parliament that is usually overwhelmed by the one particular party in terms of votes, because here you're looking at the majority side, which usually would vote in a mass and block for a particular loan agreement, even if the ingredients of such loans have not been properly looked at. So there you are, an overbearing executive presidency, exigencies of politics to refresh the electorate at all costs, and then you have a parliament that is viciously divided because they are also in the way, in a hurry, to ensure that they are impressing the electorate. But I also think, I said two, but it looks like I'm giving three, and let me just add the fourth one, is the lack of respect for expertise. You know, it beats my mind that we've had issues with the CNTI loan, the loan that was supposed to be procured from a hairdresser saloon during the Kufu administration. And we're having instances where we still have XTS still hanging around our necks because we don't know whether it's going to happen or not. And you keep wondering, why are we going to these kinds of negotiations without seeking expert opinion? You know, in other jurisdictions, at least parliamentarians, some of them are very knowledgeable in the subject, or do proper diligence, or just invite people with expertise. There are so many fund managers in this country, private fund managers. There are people who are skilled professionals when it comes to handling money. And at least we could be calling on these people to appear before parliament or the committee to testify as to whether what loans we are going for are good or not. But as you see, our problems have always been exigencies of politics. And sometimes it then betrays the intelligence that we think that we should be having so much for delivering development for the country.
So you see partisanship as a big problem in helping us see exactly what we should see when assessing some of these facilities?
Of course, partisanship has always been the case. I mean, even under KUPOR, the CNTI loan, it may not necessarily be because the opposition at the time thought that they had some good information as to whether the loan will come or not, or even in the current circumstances where the XPS is not happening, it is not because you think that. It is simply because it's because Parliament, the minority were a bit, the minority probably had done all their due diligence. It wasn't the case at all. It was simply the case of partisanship. We disagree, we think you're taking too much loans without necessarily doing all the proper work that one needs to do in order to procure the loan. So yes, partisanship has been an issue, and clearly it's not the way to go.
Mr. Franklin, could you please hold on as I go back to Mr. James Abeji, who is still on the line. Mr. Abeji, thank you so much for staying on the line. You've heard from Imani exactly what they think and what Franklin Kujo was saying. Do you sometimes see partisanship as worrying the process, irrespective of which side it is?
Thank you very much. I'm tempted to agree with the Imani Ghana, Franklin Kujo, and some of these issues. But what I would want to say is that most of these laws that we take, we do not have partisan decisions at the committee level. It's always been by consensus at the committee level. There are very few ones, very controversial ones, probably for some other reasons, as you said, by partisan reasons, some will disagree, even though if they know that this facility is a good facility, because of party politics, they want to disagree with the government. So I'll not rule out partisan issues in this sense completely, but again, most of these things are taken at the committee level by consensus, which involve all parties in parliament, both majority side and the minority side. That is what I want to say. But the other one that is said about the use of the expert knowledge, the use of expert knowledge will not in any way they said too much meat doesn't spoil the soup. I will want to say that Parliament will have experts in Parliament who have knowledge in this field. We also have the same technical support from the executive. That is why when we invite the ministers, we ask the ministers to come with their technical people who also help us with their experience. By adding or inviting other individuals who have knowledge in these areas will definitely not, it's not a wrong thing, it's a good thing all the way. But
so do you, Savage?
At what point do we do that?
Okay.
Do they provide these services for us free?
Okay, I'm asking that same question. Yes.
Yes. So that is what I want to find out from Franklin Kuju.
I'll get to him in a moment for him to respond to that particular issue. But I was saying that even when you are considering such loans, do you make it known to the experts around that this is something being considered at committee level? So would you like to come and sit in? Is it possible for you? Do you advertise it?
No, we do not. We don't do that. Now, for now, we don't do it. Because as I said, we use in-house experts. That is from members of parliament who have knowledge in that. But as you said, maybe somebody might say something, but because we look at him as an opposition or we look at him as a government, we will not take that person too serious. But we also depend on the knowledge or the expertise of the technical people, the civil servants that are coming from the ministry. That this is the position. Can you tell us more about this? So if we look at these two, the in-house knowledge, the ministry's expertise also given to us, we look at it and say, this, we are heading towards something that is good for us. But as I said, if we have the opportunity of adding expert knowledge from outside the executive and the legislature to give an independent opinion, that will enrich the work of Parliament. I agree with him. But we have to look at how do we do that. Do we do it at a fee? What is the structure? Because for now, we do not have our constitution providing that opportunity for us.
Yes, Mr. Vege, before we let you go, so at what rate or when do we see that a country is becoming highly indebted due to loans taken and all?
Well, by international standards, if your GDP debt ratio is above 50%, then you are saying you are becoming too indebted. That is, if your debt is about 50 or more percent of your GDP, then you are becoming too indebted. So that is by international standard.
What is Ghana's situation at the moment?
Ghana's situation, by the rebasing of the GDP, we are around 35 to 40%. Even with the STS coming on board, we are around 45%. So we still have more gap. Now, no lender will actually give you money if they know that your GDP debt ratio is very high. Therefore, you find it difficult to repay back this loan. They will not give you the loan. So, but for the mere fact that they have also looked at your system and realized that this is something you can afford, you can pay back, they will be willing to give you the facility. So for now, as I said, with the 3 billion CDB coming on board, we are around 45%.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Avegi, for joining us on Behind the News today. Mr. Avegi is the Finance Committee Chairman in Parliament. Coming to you, Mr. Franklin Kuju, before we wrap up, Mr. Avegi posed a question. When the experts are being brought in from outside, will the service be rendered free in the interest of the nation?
Oh, that is an interesting question, and I suspect that I'm sure Honorable James Avegi asked that question probably out of fun. I mean, wouldn't it be so nice that the part of their emoluments could be put aside to pay for these experts' advice? By the way, there are many people who I believe strongly would be interested in just appearing before Parliament on behalf of Ghana, for God and for country, and they would lend their services even pro bono. So I'm very, very sure there are many people who would want to do that. By the way, while you are at that, let this also be run transparently so that people can see, probably see on TV, some of these discussions that go on. Then people would be able to make informed decisions as to who really was stampeding a loan agreement or who was really in support of it. But I don't think we can compromise on the issue of expert appearances at all, because all over the world, in the most advanced countries, these things are done.
Yeah. So I asked Mr. Aveji, and he's saying that with the $3 billion being approved, Ghana is around 45%. So what do you say of the call that the debt or the loans being taken are too much?
Well, you know, ordinarily, once you contract debt, and sensibly so, it is expected that you are going to use it for some very good projects that would have multiplier effect. I've always said, if a project has no multiplier effect or has not got the capacity to create the development effectiveness that we all want, then it may as well not be needed. In the current scheme of things, I think we've been seeing a lot of hair splitting on the issue of the $3 billion loan. Well, we at Imani thought we shouldn't really be commenting, because earlier when we commented on the XTS and warned governments ahead that this wasn't going to happen the way they thought it would happen, because international finance is not like charity work, we were given all sorts of names. But as we speak, I think that if you ask me personally, I'm not too sure we need the $3 billion because the very reasons for which they are being procured are going to be seen in a way with our revenue. My understanding is that they want to take the loan ahead of our expected oil revenues so that somehow we can quicken development. But those are projects, my understanding is that those projects are going to take a number of years to materialize. And much as I believe that we should use our oil money properly, I'm not too sure that we want to be rushed into certain facilities that we are not too sure. Again, the Chinese are very interesting. I mean, some of us have studied the Chinese for several years now, and we know that anytime they promise funds, usually they don't disperse on time. But you never know. Maybe things might change now. And so let's wait and see how this loan facility will materialize itself into the good that we all want for the country. I think those will be the defining moments, and we wish the NDC government very well.
We want to thank you very much too for joining us on the program tonight, Franklin Kudu. Franklin Kudu is with Imani Ghana. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, live on Radio Apa West, Ura Radio, and Radio Savannah in Tamale. Some of your tests before we go for a quick break. Baba Musa UDS is saying it is better to secure loans to develop the country rather than borrowing to pay salaries, which will not generate any profit for the country's economy. And Chinisa Stephen Zella, Ghana needs loans for development. And Richard Afna from Techimai, the loans are becoming too much for the country, so I'm pleading with the government to minimize it for a while. And Aneli Isifu from Garu, if government actually goes in for all these loans, why then have the NYEP beneficiaries not been paid for the months of May to August? And this one is coming from Gilbert, from Gilbert Chiapu from Dighton. I hope I got that name right. The green light to victory is by securing loans. And Andrew Manga Boku is saying congratulations to the Black Stars, especially Kwarase. Behind the news, live on Radio Ghana and on Radio BAR in Sunyani Volta Star Radio, and also Radio Central. We are trying to quickly establish contact with our correspondent who watched the match and ran a live commentary on it. You might have heard from Andrew Mange's notes that congratulations to the Blasters, especially Kwarase. And we've managed to establish contact with Benjamin Willie Graham on the line. The Ghana Blasters this evening brightened their chances of qualifying for the 2012 African Nations Cup for a 2-0 win over Swaziland. Our correspondent Benjamin Willie Graham was one of the commentators who watched the match and has joined us. Benjamin, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, my brother, Kinsley.
Was it according to your expectation, the match, the way the players performed?
I would say it was going to be a bit 50-50 in my opinion, because one, the Swazis, we beat them 3-0 in Mbambani, Swaziland. And so we're looking at the team that actually the Black Stars played in the first leg and somewhere last year. A lot of people expected that the team was going to run riot against them today. But let's just say that the Swazis also came into this game very prepared. Their head coach, Obed Mlocha, reiterated the fact that the team that played against Ghana last year is different from what the team was going with today. And certainly, he proved the point. Even though the Stars won the game, they didn't win it on a silver platter. Samuajan in the 11th minute had to pounce on that beautiful cross from Dominic Adia, and that, you know, set a tone for people to think that we are going to win the game by a wider margin. Unfortunately, they still resolute in defense and midfield, and then eventually prevented the Stars from scoring lots of goals. I believe that much of the play depended on the tactical, you know, thinking of Coach Goran Stefanovic, because Sule Muntari was supposed to play in front of the attackers. Actually, was just a pale shadow of himself in the first half, and it was only in the latter stages of the game when he had the support of Andre Adeyemi that he started showing glimpses of some good play. But that was too late, you know, to come for a player who a lot of people expected to shine, looking at what he has been going through for the past, you know, month. I guess that the Black Stars knew that if they had no, I mean, they don't win a game by a wider margin, fans over here would not forgive them. And then they also know that, looking at the standings, Ghana, we were just, you know, sharing the same points with Sudan. Only a goal difference was separating us and Sudan. And Sudan is playing Congo. And so we needed to win the game by a wider margin so we can just keep up the pace on the goal score, you know, chart. But unfortunately, again, we couldn't do anything in the first half. It was just the second half that magic goal from, you know, Kojula Samoa, you know, gave the Black Stars the opportunity to lead Group I with 13 points plus, you know, 10 goals. I think that it was really a difficult game, in my opinion, for one to think that the Black Stars were going to win by a wider margin.
Yes, you've identified the strength of the Swazis. Who would you say really stood out among them?
Without that, I'll say Dominic Derek White was really the man of the match today. He played the holding midfield role, which of course Michael Essien have been, you know, I mean, holding on, or have been playing for the Black Stars for a while. You remember Michael Essien has picked up an injury. He's out for 6 months. And so Derek today, he really proved to everybody that he's really a very good player. I can understand why he has to move from Atletico in Spain to Ukraine, where his brother and Samuel Nkunku also play at his trade. I think that Derek today played a human's job. He made Canadians, I mean, feel that Michael Essien's absence really is not going to have any toll on the Black Stars team. And I think that everybody appreciated the fact that from the start of the referee's whistle to the end of the game, Derek controlled the midfield with so much easiness. He played it so well, professionally, was all over the place, making sure that he thwarted the efforts of the Swazi team, winning all the 50-50 balls, giving incisive passes and great control of the ball. I think Derek today stood up to be the man of the match.
Yeah. What about the Swazis?
Well, the Swazis were counting on their player, Dennis Masima, but of course, Dennis was today a lone ranger.
That's unfortunate. We lost our correspondent on location there. That is our commentator, Benjamin Willie Graham. When we manage to re-establish contact, we'll get back to him. But still moving on with sports, and this one of a different kind. The All-African Games begin tomorrow with countries competing for various medals. But can you imagine a potty medal among them? Well, that is what the Gabers and Frafres in Accra and Tema Metropolis will be competing for as they gather for their annual fan games. For many curious observers, the question is, why should a puppy be chosen as a trophy? Behind the news starts the game here as we welcome on the line Musa Chiyuwiena, a Dagaba member of the planning committee of the games. Musa, you are warmly welcome.
Thank you very much.
You are talking about the Dagabas and the Frafras. So come to why you chose the puppy, but how are you historically related?
Well, the Dagabas and the Frafras are great brothers. They have been linked historically. Maybe the real history is not exactly established, but gathering from the way we speak, it's like we are just two same brothers. They came from the same parents. And as time went on, maybe one settled somewhere and gradually the language might have changed a little bit. So many of the guys do understand the Frafras, just as the Frafras do understand the Dagabas. And we stand in unity for a very long time, generations over generations. This hasn't changed much. And I think that is a great thing. Many Ghanaians really doing, they are envious about.
Yeah. Many people are astounded when they get to know that after winning the games, one is presented with a special trophy of some kind, a puppy. Why?
Yeah, well, the puppy is a symbol. You know, puppies are very close to they are very close to the people who nurture them. And the way you treat a puppy shows the love he will have for you. And a puppy is a great thing. If you actually give somebody a puppy, you are giving a watch. The person is watched by his family and everybody. And it's a good symbol. No puppy leaves its house. They want to stay by the people who train them, and they do everything. And puppies are really like human beings.
So if
it is a puppy, that is the best trophy you ever get.
Who mooted that idea of a puppy for a trophy?
Well, you see, the puppy looking at the issue, because the puppy is so close to a family, it's more or less like a family member. Indeed, in many areas, when a puppy dies, children are crying, wives are crying, and maybe it's been buried like this. History has it that the time that the Gabes and the Frafra, or the two brothers, the Dagao and then the Frafra, were together, they went on a hunting and they had this puppy. And the puppy was so close to, but it was such that they never got anything, and they were hungry. It was time of hunger, and there was no food. So they had to kill this puppy to survive. And when they killed the puppy, then it was like, now what do we do? One of the people suggested, it was a Frafra who suggested, let's roast it. And that the Gaba being, well, we say we are more clever, we say, let's boil it. And when we boil it, we'll eat, and then there's still some broth to drink, and you'll be more satisfied. But the Frafra was so hungry, they can't stand the hunger. So they said, oh no, it's quicker to roast it. So there was that small incident between them. So it was like, okay, let's divide it. So the Frafra man quickly roasted his own and chopped, and the Dagati man boiled his own, and there was broth, and the Frafra man came begging for a broth. So it was like, if we see the Frafras were joking, it was, let's roast the dog, or let's boil the dog. And it was, so how do you boil, for example? How do you roast the eggs of the dog? How do you roast the head of the dog? So it has been something that is in between us, and it has stand the time of time, and we are really great to have each other, and that love and friendship that the dog showed to its people, the two brothers, had always been a kind of unity between the two tribes.
Mr. Riena, just hold on for us. We have Adungu Awini, a Frafra member of the planning committee, also on the line at the moment. So we'll get back to you. You're welcome, Mr. Adungu Awini.
Thank you.
Yes, we often hear of Bonaboto on a regular basis. What is the difference between the Frafra and the Dagaba games and then the greater Bonaboto?
Yes. Bonaboto stands for Bolga, Nangori, Tongo, and Bongo. So that is the people who reside within these areas, which are the Frafra group, and that is called Bonaboto. Bonaboto members, or for that matter, the citizenry of Bonaboto area, were actually brothers with the Dagabes, according to history. Now, it happened that, like just as Musa said, they one day went to farm, and then when they came back, they were really hungry, but the only thing that was left, that was available, was a dog for them to kill. And there was actually a disagreement between the two brothers as to how to kill the thing and prepare it so that it can be food, can become food for them to eat. At the end of the day, the disagreement actually arose because of the head of the dog. After the Frafra people were able to take, the elder brother who was the Frafra man, took the dog head and gave him part. He was very angry and then he went away, but I still pursued him, that is his brother. And so wherever he met him and then his family, he just played with him and then his family.
Okay.
Just because of the head.
Okay.
Even though he claimed that it is because of the broth. The Frafra man, or the elder man, the elder one who is the Frafra, tells that in roasting is faster than boiling. And the Dagasi man, he thought that because he can get broth from it, which he will use for his kose and then jangjaka, or other, you know, it's a local food. The Frafra man said, no, my friend, we are hungry. I'm wiser than you. Let's do the thing very fast so that we can eat. And then he said, jala. He said, no. The performer said, no, this is not jello. It is the head. But you see, unknowingly, the Gati man was referring to the brain as a jala. But the performer said, no, this is the brain. We don't call it jala. Dog doesn't lay eggs. Jala means egg. And dog doesn't lay egg. But the Gati man says, dog lay eggs. So this has been there for a very long time between the Dagabes and then Frafras. And so because of unity, wherever they meet, they play over it, about dog head, you know, and then they talk about broth, the leg, all parts of the, you know, the person, the yeah. animal, I mean yeah. dog.
So would you say that the games really are helping your cause?
Yes, and because of this particular dog, since 1995, when most of our people actually moved to down south, Accra, Kumasi, and other areas, members of our community felt that it is good to reignite the relationship that exists between the Dagabes and Frafras, so that those who have moved out of upper region, that is upper west and upper east, will know that, oh, really, at home, this is how our people relate. And that is why the game came into existence. And so anytime we are playing the game, it's just to bring about the unity, or to showcase the unity that actually exists between these two brothers
mm-hmm.
from time immemorial.
Okay. Hence, this year, who is going to win?
Hence, we always use a puppy as our trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, the Frafras are going to win. The Dagabes cannot win. Last year, the Frafras just allowed them to win because every year we take the trophy, which is a puppy. And this time, last year, we decided to allow the Dagabes to take it.
What has been happening to the puppies over the period, those presented?
Oh, definitely. You see, each group that wins and then gets the puppy as a trophy will go home with that particular puppy. Then rear the puppy, then it will grow. While the Dagabes, they don't slaughter. They hit the head, and then the dog will die. Then they will use it and prepare for their jangjaka, get their broth and prepare it. But definitely, when it comes to the Frafras, we also rear it. And then, when it is time, when the animal grows, we invite our Dagaba friends, because we should believe that they are the younger brothers, so we bring them in. The senior man has the responsibility to always make sure that there's unity between he and then his younger brother.
Yeah, okay.
We call them, then we all enjoy it
together. Okay. Yes. We want to thank you very much. But coming quickly to you, Mr. Musa Cheryo Wiena, are you winning?
Yeah, we surely win them. I mean, the Frafras, they don't know how to run. They are quite lazy. They thought maybe they won one or twice. But you see, this time, we want to win that dog for kids. And that means that every year we are going to win it. Well, this time, what we want to do is that we're going to keep all those dogs. And in the 5 years' time, we are making a strategic plan. In 5 years, we bring all the dogs and show them that these dogs are the symbol. They are the characters that we say will actually unite. And then we will lead the dogs, maybe if we get back to our home, back to the north, we will go into a hunting expedition. And then the dogs will catch some animals for us to enjoy together.
We want to thank you very much and wish you all the best in the games. It's the Dagaba Frafra Games in Accra tomorrow. And you know the trophy, it will be a puppy medal. Mr. Musa Cheryo Wiena is a Dagaba member of the planning committee. Just finished with him. We have some of your tests here. What we need to do as a country is to make sure that those responsible for managing these loans do it well for the benefit of all. From Philip Atimbuni Akara from Garotempine and Sebu Sumaila, Cancer Upper West. I want to thank the Blasters for their wonderful work. Ghana is proud of them. And Sherry from Zedla, I think securing loans for development is a good idea since it has been the norm of every government that comes into power. We are moving on to our last story. Many people have given him different descriptions, but one thing that will not be missing in an encounter with him is that this is a giant in humor, precise with his depiction of various situations and amiable to the letter. On occasions, he may be described as a workaholic, but the average observer will not fail to realize that he was a stickler for excellence in journalism. Now, he is gone. Merari Alomele, the editor of The Spectator, died on the 30th of June this year after a short illness. Messages of condolence have poured in from a cross-section of the population extolling the virtues of the fallen giant. Yesterday, a compilation of his Superman Palava column was launched in his memory. Dave Agbenu is the organizing secretary of the Ghana Journalists Association and worked with Merari for more than 15 years. We have him joining us on the line. Dave, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
How was it working with Merari?
I must say that Merari was a mentor to many of us. Many of us looked up to him for inspiration, and he indeed tutored us in many of the areas of journalism that hitherto we didn't know before coming into the employment of Ghanaian Times.
Can you mention one or two of those things?
I mean, Merari was a features writer by excellence. And therefore, when you attempt to write features, you go to him, you write, you go through, and tell you about what you needed to do to make the feature interesting. He was like a teacher. He was like a father. He did so many things for us.
So, as you are talking, you might be recollecting maybe some of the experiences. Can you share with us one or two?
You know, Merari, as witty as he is, anytime you go to him for an advice or to ask him to teach you something, he has a way of giving everybody guidance. He has to be, depending on the relationship you have with him. Some call him Alo, the short form of his surname. Some call him, he calls some people Kanyami. Others, they call Aze. Such is a person that when you approach him, he will just make you feel at home. Even though he's far, far, far our senior, he comes down to our level. Down to our level such that you can ask him anything under the sun. Anything. And if you look through his writing, he writes on every topic. Politics, education, health, women, men. I mean, the guy is just a phenomenon.
Yeah.
You cannot describe him.
So, the launch, how did it go?
It went quite well. A good number of people were there. Our colleagues were there. And the book was reviewed as is normally done, and we had a good laugh at the review because there are some interesting topics that were shared with the people, and a lot of the books were bought at the launch.
Yeah. Naturally, he maintained that posture that Exis Futa can never do a dance very well, and I don't know whether you had that experience with him. Did he ever dance?
Well, we never saw a lot dancing. He may be tapping on some notes if there's music around, but to see him dance in the way everybody will shake his body or something, we never saw him dance.
So what are the plans for his interment?
Tomorrow, this afternoon, he was brought to New Times Corporation for the workers to pay their last respect. And he's been taken to Chema, where he lives. There will be a family wakekeeping, and tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, he will be laid in state for all the well-wishers and friends, relatives, to file pass and pay their last respects before he will go home finally and be buried at his hometown, Abetile Peki.
Okay.
In the water region, yes.
Dave Agbenu, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah.
But just before we go, the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association, Athol Money, is also on the line. You are warmly welcome.
Thank you, KOK.
Yes. So what is the association doing to let the memory of this giant stand?
We have instituted a monument in the form of a book by a committee on which the GGA was strongly represented, was formed to put together his rights into a book, and we played an instrumental role in that exercise. And that book, as they've indicated, was launched yesterday, and I believe the book will extol his name, and then serve as a reminder to both the new and younger, new and the older generation of journalists that yes, it pays to leave a mark. And then Maloli, as we all know, has left a mark which will be very difficult to erase throughout the ages. It is said that the difference between a writer and a good writer is the ability to craft the language. Merari was blissfully blessed and wondrously gifted the ability to craft the language to such an extent that he could hook your attention and sustain your attention throughout his writings. And DJ has lost one of the symbols of superb penmanship, and we believe in the next world he will continue to make his mark.
I want to thank you very much, and we hope the generation that is now will continue to learn from what he did. Thank you so much, Athol Money, for sharing this one too with us.
I'm grateful.
The Behind the News team and GBC would like to still extend deepest condolences to the family in this time of grief. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of our production team of Abraham Asari, Christopher Esiedu, Edmund Tete, Bright Agama, and all the rest of them, together with Barbara Yakubu. My name is Kingsley Obintre.